Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
On each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 119. Get that bread.
I feel like we are both too old. No, we're both too old for this. Yeah, we're too old for this.
Bread!
This is our Murtaugh moment. I'm too old for this shit.
You know what, though? We're making bread happen. We're kneading it because they need it. Uh-huh. I'm pointing at the microphone because that's where our listeners live in my head. You guys are all living in the microphone. I'm speaking right to you.
In our wave three.
From Elgato.
That they so graciously sent us?
Yes.
There's a little product placement for you. A little too early in the morning? No, it's 2 o'clock in the
afternoon. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You got to get pretty up pretty early in the morning.
To get that bread. Moving on.
Heyo. All right, we have 6 companies to talk about today. Some interesting stuff.
Nothing super surprising.
Nothing shocking. But some interesting stuff nonetheless. We're going to start off with Sega reporting on the first 9 months of its fiscal year. Net sales are up 12.6% to 236.8 billion yen. That's $2.07 billion. This is notable because Sega has had a rough go of things because of its investment in live event type of things, whether that's arcades. Resorts, arcades, and we know they've fully deaccessioned from the arcade business now, so they out. Operating income was up 141.5% to 32.7 billion yen. That's $285.7 million. Now, quick refresher here. If you're not familiar with the term operating income, it is a key measure that the financial industry looks at to determine the health of a company because it takes all of that revenue that you bring in related to what you did during the year and it compares it against the expenses of the activities that you did in that year. So it's where we take taxes out of it, we take acquisitions or sales, all that stuff, because this is really about your day-to-day operations and how well you're managing
your cash flow,
your expenses, all of that. Net income is back in the black finally at 29.5 billion yen or $257.6 million. Again, Sega's had challenges along the way.
Mm-hmm.
One of those challenges, though, was not their entertainment contents division, and this is where...
That's video games
and much, much more for Sega. So that segment revenue was up 6.1% to 177.9 billion yen or $1.55 billion for the first 9 months. Noting that SMT5, Football Manager 2022, and Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania all performed very strongly.
Okay.
Catalog sales were down, interestingly, from 34,200 units to 21,970 units. And again, we saw during the pandemic that catalog was huge across the board because it meant that people finally had time to go back and play games that they might have missed, especially if they were new or returning consumers to the industry.
Right.
Free-to-play games did really well for Sega in this period. Hatsune Miku Colorful Stage and Phantasy Star Online 2 New Genesis both performed well. And then there's a note here because entertainment contents is such a catch-all for Sega. Video production, toys, and other little items that are in there perform strongly during the holiday period. Not a surprise. It's prime gift-giving time, and these are prime gifts to give.
Indeed.
Patchy Slot and Pachinko Machine...
Are not prime slot are gifts to
no.
give.
No.
Would you like a Patchy Slot for our new house?
I was actually just wondering. It's like, I'm super excited about the arcade cabinet that you guys got me for my birthday, and that we're going to set up in the new house. Relatively early. I'm just wondering, do people have Patchy Slot and Pachinko machines in their house?
I feel like that would be a hard no. Because what would you do with them? Would you gamble at home? Oh. Gambling alone. At home.
Don't gamble alone in the dark, kids.
Don't do
always
it.
Gamble with
I mean,
friends. Gamble
listen,
responsibly.
But listen, the house always wins. So at least there's that.
It's true. It is true. Good news here, net sales were up sharply, 38.7% to 51.8 billion yen, or $453.5 million. Ordinary income was 6 billion yen, or $52.5 million, versus a loss of 8.8 billion in the first 9 months of last year, so that's $77 million.
And part of that was because of, you know, the economy being mm-hmm. very closed in, but also because there was a lot of regulation that was being hammered out and they needed new machines.
Absolutely. So this is the upside of that.
Yep.
They sold 4 times the number of patch slot units versus the first 9 months of last year. They sold 48,000 units versus 12,000. So that shows you how things are turning around.
Mm-hmm.
On the pachinko side, they sold a hair more, 64,000 versus 59,000 units.
Okay.
The resort business is finally recovering. The number of guests was up 111.4%. Net sales were up 36.8% to 6.7 billion yen or $58.4 million. Last year showed an ordinary loss of 6.6 billion yen or $58.1 million. So they've effectively flipped that all the way around. Wow. Those red numbers turned black in equal measure, effectively. So, things are turning around for Sega. This is really good. The diversified strategy, again, pre-pandemic, you look at a strategy like this and it's like, okay, if one of the legs of the stool isn't as stable as it needs to be, we've got so many other things to catch it. But the problem was that only one leg of the stool for Sega was really stable while everything else faltered for all the reasons.
Ain't nobody can sit
on that stool. Yeah, right. That stool just toppled over. So it's really good to see Sega back and performing well. We're going to talk about them a little bit more in the news show, the next news show, because they're all in on transmedia. This trend is so huge, and Sega's
with
in position. Yeah.
I said 5 years ago that transmedia was the future.
I know. Well, it's very much the now between Sonic and Yakuza.
Yeah.
So Sega's really well positioned
That to me proves the health of a particular IP or franchise is, can you translate it to other forms of media? Well, in this case, yes, you can.
Absolutely. All right, next up, Remedy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mike, take us through Remedy.
All right, Remedy's fiscal year mirrors the calendar year, so this is for both Q4 and the full year. Some Q4 highlights. Revenue was up 39.4% year-over-year to 19.8 million euro, or $22.3 million. Operating profit margin was a stellar 56.9% at 11.3 million euros, $12.7 million. So, again, we look at that operating profit margin, because they didn't report out the operating profit itself, but the margin is really what matters here. That's the metric. And 56.9% is really good. Typically, we're seeing in 30-40%.
That they're managing their cash flow very, very well.
Yeah, and for the full year, we'll get there. It was significantly lower for the full year. It's just that Q4 had a very, very strong profit
because
margin.
Because that's also when Alan Wake Remastered came out.
Mm-hmm. And Crossfire HD, which they came out in China.
Right.
And they did the Crossfire X campaign here in the West. I don't know if that launched as... I guess that launched as well in China.
I don't know.
So, I have not played it yet.
No.
Full year highlights...
I did, however, play Alan Wake Remastered.
That's so good.
It's so good, and it's just as good as I remember.
Mm-hmm. Full year highlights. Revenue was up 8.9% to 44.7 million euros, or $50.5 million. Operating profit and operating profit margin were up a bit for the full year, with operating profit at 14.7 million euros, or $16.6 million. And the operating margin for the year, the operating profit margin for the year at 32.9%. So right in that range where we're looking at.
Right.
Remedy noted that they raised 41.5 million euros or $46.8 million through a new share offering just to select institutional investors.
Interesting.
So they are looking to raise capital, which is interesting.
That is very interesting.
They have a new studio that's opening in Stockholm this year. So they needed some capital for that.
No, it makes sense. Makes sense.
In terms of upcoming games, obviously we know that Alan Wake 2 is coming.
Heck yeah.
That is being published by Epic. The Control co-op game, Project Condor, is in the proof of concept stage. That's being published by 505, as is the larger Control game, Heron, which we assume to be Control 2.
They would be very silly to not make
there's a lot of stories.
Sequel.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories to be told in that. Well, I mean, it's all shared universe at this point, right?
It is.
Because we know Alan Wake is there. I can't wait for, like...
Doesn't necessarily have to be the oldest house.
Right. It could be... I mean, so I... this is me spitballing. It would not surprise me if the co-op game was designed as a series of missions where you and your friends go out and deal with altered world events.
That could be really neat. I'd play that game.
And then Control 2, I'm hoping that we see... Obviously, we saw some tie-ins with Alan Wake. And I think we saw some tie-ins with Max Payne. There was something about... Because there's already tie-ins between Alan Wake and Max Payne.
Right.
I'm wondering if they're, we're going to see some Quantum Break stuff.
That's the one I'm really hoping for, is I really do hope they pull in some interesting Quantum Break narrative goodies. Mm-hmm.
I liked that game quite a lot.
I know you did.
Yes. So that's everything on Remedy. Solid year for them. Solid, very solid quarter for them.
Mm-hmm.
Big things ahead. New studio opening. Very excited. Huge, 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 huge Remedy fan here on the gameplay side. Yeah, that's it.
All right.
Nice and easy. Manda, Zynga.
All right. Speaking of easy breezy, not like Zynga's got anything going on, right? They're not going through, you know, some sincere scrutiny right now with the whole, you know, potentially being acquired by Take-Two.
Right. And just as a reminder, we saw this with Activision, which is being acquired by Microsoft. Zynga will not have a call.
They didn't have
a call. That means no transcript, no additional color, no quotes, no investor questions. So this is really down to the numbers.
Yeah, it's down to the numbers here. And the numbers are really solid for Zynga. So let's take a look at Q4 because Zynga also follows the calendar year. So we're looking at Q4 and full year for fiscal 2021. So for Q4, revenue is up 13% year over year to $695 million, which was a record for a fourth quarter. Net bookings are up 4% year over year to $727 million, which is best ever for quarterly bookings.
Mm-hmm.
So we're breaking some company records here.
Mm-hmm.
Net income, however, is still at a loss, and it is a greater loss year over year by 27%. Remember, Zynga tends to operate at a loss. They have a very big toy chest to pull from, but they also have a ton of studios that they're responsible for. It's what made Zynga such an attractive acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
Their advertising and other revenue was a quarterly record. Remember how I said last year, keep an eye on advertising because ad revenue is going to spike? Ad revenue continues to spike. It was a quarterly record of $161 million, which is up 37% year over year.
Wild.
So Zynga, we got to talk about the operating cash flow and how things are looking in terms of the health of the company. Operating cash flow was sitting at $158 million, but it was down $48 million year over year. Not huge, like not terrible,
mm-hmm.
but also...
they also did some acquisitions,
they
right?
did do some
so
acquisitions.
So that's going to affect their cash flow.
Yeah, Rollic just is worked on a number of acquisitions last year throughout Turkey, and as we covered on our last news show, Rollic is in the process of purchasing their first studio outside of Turkey, and Rollic is a wholly owned subsidiary of mm-hmm. Zynga. DAUs, so that those are our daily active users, were 37 million, which is up 3%. Year over year, and MAUs, so monthly active users, were 184 million, up 38% year over year.
Wow, and that's for the fourth quarter.
That's for the fourth
quarter.
So
October through December. Wild.
Correct.
All right, let's talk about full year.
So full year, things are actually looking pretty good for the full year. So revenue for the full year is up 42% year over year to $2.8 billion. And net bookings are up 24% year over year to $2.82 billion. Even though Q4, now we were just looking at Q4, the operating loss, essentially, the net income was operating at a loss. The full year's losses were actually a lot lower. They ended up racking up more losses in the last quarter of the year than at any other point during the year. So it's 76% lower than the year before.
Wow. Which, of course, not all of this is going to matter on a corporate scale,
no.
a full corporate scale, once the Take-Two acquisition goes through.
Yeah.
And then you've got a variety of things that happen. You've got economies of scale that can come into play that'll help whittle that down.
Yep.
You've got synergies that'll help whittle some of that stuff down. We will still... I'm going to be interested to see if Take-Two reports them out as a separate business unit, because they don't typically report out separate business units, if
I would look at 2K
versus...
If this makes it past muster with the FTC, now remember the FTC is also taking a look at Take-Two and Zynga.
Mm.
They are not, this is not bypassing anything. The FTC is very, very interested in the gaming industry, and as is Congress.
I guess they finally woke up, huh?
Yeah, they woke up, and also there are folks in politics that are pushing... better laws or different laws, rather. I don't know if they're better or not, but different laws around anti-monopolies. So we'll have to see how that ends up going. I would be, it would I would be sad if they did not report out Zynga's, like, any of Zynga's stuff separately, because I think that Zynga is such an interesting company.
I don't think we're going to get it based on how they report out 2K and Rockstar
right now. I don't think that we're going to get it either, so we'll just have to take in the data where we can, I guess. So, operating cash flow was sitting at $254 million for the full year. That's down $176 million year over year. So, partly because acquisitions.
Yeah.
They did, however, end the year with approximately $1.2 billion in cash and investments. Which is not bad.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's a chunk of change.
It is.
I would like to end the year with $1.2 billion in cash and investments.
I mean, I don't quite. It's too much.
I would have somebody else manage it for me, but it would be nice to, like, not worry and be able to, like, fund games. And...
Well, that's different. If we're talking about funding awesome indies from all over the world, then yes, I would also like to go to
that. I would like to be an indie angel. I would like to just drop money on people, be like,
here you go.
May make a cool game. Surprise!
Surprise, prototype money. Yeah.
It's the indie fairy.
Oh, I'd love that. Being the indie fairy would be the best. So anyway, they had a couple of, like, big records for their daily active and monthly active users. So daily active users for the year was a record 39 million players. That's up 41% year over year. Now wait for it. It's the MAUs, the monthly active users, were 184 million players, up 107% year over year.
I wonder what Take-Two's interest in them is.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean,
between the marketing and the ads and the players, what could Take-Two possibly want with them?
I still think they're just a smidge overvalued.
I think after Codemasters, I think Take-Two wasn't taking any chances.
Oh, well, that's fair. They are the laggards. So anyway, like Mike said, we didn't have an earnings call, so there's no, you know, there's no transcript where Frank was talking or anything like that, so I'm kind of sad about it. But he did have very pleasant...
He will be on the Take-Two calls from now on, so you'll just have to listen to Strauss.
Ugh.
And then Frank.
No, I'll just listen to Frank. I like Frank. I don't like Strauss. And I don't care if he doesn't like me either. No, thank you. So anyway, he was complimentary in the press release saying, you know, like, look at all these great things that Zynga did. I'm really proud of my team.
Great.
So... no really big surprises here. I mean, the advertising and other revenue as a quarterly record, that it didn't surprise me, but I was like, that confirms a few suspicions I've had.
Honestly, the biggest surprise of this entire thing, not just this, out of everything we're going to talk about today, is what didn't happen, not what did happen.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I mean, I guess you'll have to tell me what you mean. But
I will.
Okay.
It'll be a mystery.
When we get there.
That's right. We're baking that bread slowly.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I'm going to be real sour about this.
I know you need me to tell.
All right. You know what? You know what? We're going to have a really quick break, and we will be right back with Roblox.
Yeah, don't get crusty.
I'm going to... What? Why are you like this? Stop it.
Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz.
All right, and we are back. No quick hits, though, because...
It's time for Quick Hits.
Yeah, it's definitely not Quick Hits. We're going to keep the hits coming.
That's like walking out of Chuck E. Cheese as they're closing down, and that's the song. Like,
that's terrible. Also, I've never been to a Chuck E. Cheese before, so.
You know, there's one, like, right
down I really
down
don't
Route
want
10.
To. I don't think you understand. I'd rather
you
just
You could have
home.
The worst pizza
You're
ever.
You're not listening to
grimy
me.
Grimy games.
No.
And a talking mouse in a smelly costume.
No.
We're going and I'm telling them it's your birthday.
You're the worst person I've ever known.
That's right. Everybody, wish Manda a happy birthday when I take her to Chuck E. Cheese this week.
No. We are 6 months too early for my birthday. Anyway, my point is, I'd rather go home to Kamloops and I can go to Rutgers. It's better. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about Roblox. So we're talking about Roblox Q4 and full year for fiscal 2021. So some highlights from Q4. Revenue was up 83% year over year to $568.8 million. Net bookings were up 20% year over year to $770.1 million. DAUs were up 33% to 49.5 million players, which is just wow. And engagement hours is actually something that they're reporting on now, which is up 28% year over year to 10.8 billion hours spent in Roblox.
I wish, you know what? I don't wish any company, like, real ill, but I wish Roblox would fix its shit, because they're...
Oh, we'll get to it. There's more stuff.
Oh, good.
Yeah, there's some highlights from the transcripts. I didn't get everything, because I just glazed over reading the same thing over and over again. So some full year highlights for Roblox for fiscal 2021, and it was a record fiscal year. Revenue was up a whopping 108% year over year to 1.9 billion bells for Tom Nook. Net bookings increased 45% year over year to $2.7 billion. DAUs were up 40% year over year to 45.5 million players, and engagement hours were staggeringly 41.4 billion hours, which is an increase of 35% year over year.
And we thought Facebook was bad. Like, Roblox scares me.
Roblox kind of scares me, too. I'm not going to lie to you. So I was looking at some of their demographic, some of the ways in which they're measuring their players, right? Mm. So they have their under 13s and their over 13s. Under 13s have their accounts managed by their parents. Over 13s obviously are responsible for their own accounts.
I wish you would have just put that in air quotes, because I'm wondering how many of these parents actually manage their kids on Roblox.
Even if I put it in air quotes, it wouldn't have benefited anyone other than you.
I'm the only one here, except our little friends in the microphone.
No one was looking.
I was thinking of you. All by myself.
Terrible. Anyway, so children under 13, as of Q4 2021, let me finish my analysis.
Keep talking, I'm just scoring.
No, I don't want to score. You're not listening. Are you done?
No, keep going.
No, I don't want you to score this. This is ridiculous. I was alone. Okay, enough. Throw you, I'm going to defenestrate you at some point. So anyway.
I was thinking of you.
This is my fault. I actually did this to myself. I never fucking learn. Children under 13 comprise 23.6% of Roblox's total users as of Q4 2021. It is an increase. But where the big increases were is actually the 17 through 24-year-old segment in January specifically grew 51% year over year.
Okay.
So that's a big one. Roblox also paid out $500 million on the platform over the last year. But as we know, getting that money out of Roblox is a nightmare.
Yeah, because they pay you in scrip.
They pay you in company scrip.
Because they hope that what you're going to do is you're just going to buy more digital tchotchkes with it on the system, and they don't actually have to pay you any cash.
Exactly.
So here's the thing. When they say they paid $500 million out, is that $500 million cash equivalent, or did $500 million leave the company?
See, I don't know.
And I'm pretty sure it's $500 million equivalent. I want to know how much money left the company. I want to know how much money was cashed out of Roblox.
I don't think they report on that. I see your meaning.
I wonder why. Because they want to position themselves as being altruistic. This is great. Oh, we pay people out, right? It's great. They you can make a living on it. Bitch, I can't buy food with Robux.
That should have been the real title of the episode.
Can't buy food with Robux.
Can't buy food with Robux. Okay, so I mean, Roblox did do some paying of people, but in scrip, probably.
Yeah.
So anyway, some highlights from the transcripts. The transcripts themselves, like the call itself, rather, was kind of boring. There wasn't really anything going on. There were some choice questions from analysts, though, which was neat.
Okay.
So just as a precursor, this is David Baszucki, who is the CEO at Roblox. There was strong growth in Asia Pacific, Latin America, and Europe. Japan and Asia both grew over 100% year over year. So Roblox is very global.
You can't see me. I'm shaking my head right now.
It's very global. Wait for it. Here's another one. This is actually a quote right from the call in the presentation. Over 40% of the top 100 experiences on Roblox right now are using voice. And we are working thoughtfully and carefully as we expand this rollout to our 13 and up validated users.
Wait a minute. Hold
yep.
on.
Yep.
I have concerns.
What are your concerns, darling?
13 and up?
Yep.
After all the shit that we saw with Facebook or Meta. That's how I'm going to say it. Meta.
Dirks.
For those of you who watch Letterkenny, that one was for you. For those of you who don't, please watch Letterkenny. Please.
Please.
Won't you get this guy a puppers? So, my issue here is after everything we heard about Meta and their Horizon Worlds and the grooming and unfettered access of minors. So, you're 13 and up validated users. So, someone turns 13. Yay, it's my birthday. I'm going to go play Roblox and I can use voice now in my favorite games. Oh, hi, everybody. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, kid? Do you want to come over to my room in Roblox? I want to show you my puppy.
Like...
I catch your drift here, Mike, but that was disturbing.
I want to show you my Roblox puppy.
That's terrible. We tell children not to go into unmarked white vans. You
well,
know?
He hasn't decorated his room, so it's this one unmarked white box in the game.
You know what? That actually does bring up a really valid point, right? We talk about digital spaces as though they are wholly separate from physical spaces, and they're just simply not.
They're not.
They were for a time before we had, you know, voice over IP, before we had, you know, a ton of access to messaging on the internet, social media, all of that stuff, social networks. And this is what creates these really scary moments mm-hmm. for parents. 40% of the top 100 experiences on Roblox are using voice.
Yeah. Hey, Mom, can I talk with my new friends on Roblox? What are your friends' names? I don't know. Big Jim 00100011001. What do you know about Big Jim 00100101? I know his name's Big Jim 00100101. I changed the...
Yeah, you changed it literally three times.
Whatever. Fine, Big Jim 8675309. How's that? We'll forget that one.
Nope, no one will. Oh man, you just dated yourself and me hard.
Yeah. So, it's like... Okay, yeah, go talk with your friend Big Jim. What are you and Big Jim going to talk about? I don't know. He's got lollipops that he wants to show me.
That's fucked.
Parents, do not let your kids talk on Roblox unsupervised.
Don't let your children talk on any voice app unsupervised.
But especially Roblox.
Yeah, like,
come
don't do
on.
It. Don't do it. So, at any rate,
all
this
right,
was...
I'm going to put down Horizon Worlds. I'm going to go talk with Big Jim 8675309 on Roblox.
Cool, neat. Don't love that. At any rate, so we have some concerns.
Yes.
That's a big one. Yeah. You know, David Baszucki was very clear that they want to do this safely and
uh-huh.
thoughtfully.
Uh-huh.
But also, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should.
Yeah,
you
this is my really... I don't believe your bullshit face.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Yeah.
And I don't believe you. I really don't.
We will do everything in our power up until it actually costs us money.
Yeah, that's kind of how this feels.
We're going to keep children from getting killed on our digital platform. That's safety.
Cool, neat. Okay, let's get into some questions that some analysts brought up. A lot of what the analysts were talking about and what they wanted to know about was things like the metaverse, even though Roblox is, you know, an early player in the whole metaverse discussion. Yeah, that comment was like, the metaverse has been around for 30 years. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Where has it been? Where?
Second Life, baby.
That's not 30 years old.
I'm
35. That's not 30 years old.
I'm going to woohoo.
No, it's The Sims. Okay, anyway, I want to talk about localization.
What is it called in Second Life, then?
I don't know.
It's not Yiffin.
Did you just say that word on our podcast? You didn't. Hey, you're banned. Let me talk about localization. So one of the analyst's questions was about localization's impact on growth. So this is, again, this is from the CEO, David Baszucki. We have a twofold vision, like any other traditional software product, and we want our clients and in certain countries, Roblox to be available in the local language, so we continue to expand those languages. This one, this is the one, what, this is the thing that I felt really strongly about. The second thing is when a creator makes content on Roblox, in addition to pushing that content to one time to any device, one tablet, computer, console, we will also want to push that content automatically to multiple languages at the same time. I actually do think that's really interesting because UGC tends to just stay wholly localized in their own language and in their own, you know, like so that no one else, unless you speak that language or read that language, you're not going to be able to interact with the content. And if it is a particularly interesting experience or a particularly interesting mini game, you know, you're barred from it. You're not going to be able to participate. So I actually thought that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The other question that I honestly cannot remember the last time that I saw an analyst asking a question like this was a question about gift cards. Because I thought that was really neat. So one of the analysts was like, okay, well, what has been, can you talk about the gift cards' impact on last quarter's earnings? So this is actually from Mike Guthrie, who is the CFO at Roblox. Gift cards grew incredibly quickly, and what we've learned is that it is an incredible channel. It's very powerful getting gift cards in front of more people as they're in the physical world, and this is a high priority for us. And we just grew at a really accelerated rate in the gift card business in December. It's a great gifting item.
I have thoughts, but
You have thoughts as a parent.
I do.
What this comes down to is Mike and I are constantly having to tread the line in, like, especially with, you know, experiences like Minecraft and with Roblox. They exist on two completely opposite planes of existence. Minecraft, I feel very confident in letting our children run around, and even our 9-year-old now, run around in with her friends, because I know that they're not going to run into random folks because they're on private servers.
Right.
You know, but I can't say to the kids, yeah, go play Roblox with your pals, because I can't trust that my children are going to be safe.
Exactly.
So Mike and I, as analysts, we find Roblox to be very interesting. Their growth trajectory has been really interesting to track. But as parents, they scare the crap out of us.
Yep, it's true.
All right, so we have two more?
Two more, Starbreeze and Embracer Group.
There we go. All right, so walk us through Starbreeze.
Starbreeze is still recovering from its reorganization and reconstruction after running into very tough times now about 5 years ago.
Yep. Was it 5 years ago?
4 years ago.
4 years ago. It was 2018 they really started to get into trouble.
Yeah, so it was 4 years ago.
Because it was the tail end. It was Q4 of 2018 they started running into some sincere issues.
Yeah.
Because their publishing deal with Behavior Interactive, the folks behind that very, very tiny
game.
That tiny little asymmetrical horror game, Dead by Daylight.
Yeah. So for Q4, net sales were down about 5% to 31.1 million crowns. That's $3.36 million.
Not krona?
So apparently crowns. Because krona means crown.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, I learned something.
Yeah.
Neat.
Payday was a whopping 97% of net sales in Q4. Like, we knew this. This is not a surprise when we say that Payday, like, all of their eggs are in the Payday basket.
That's a bad time.
It's real bad.
What if Payday's eggs go rotten? They're going to have a lot of rotten joint.
I mean, look, I think Payday, like, they're on track to release Payday 3 eventually. Payday 2,
I love that. Payday 3 at some point.
Yeah, but Payday 2 on PC, and we'll talk about this in a second, they've restarted the engine on releasing new content.
Well, because they've been done,
and I think they figured out it's like, okay, this is where we're making our money.
Right.
We need to keep people engaged. Losses for the quarter were 13 million crowns or $1.4 million. That's a slight improvement from a loss of 16.4 million crowns last year, or $1.77 million in the fourth quarter. For the full year, net sales were up 6.5% to 125.7 million crowns or $13.6 million. Payday for the full year was 95.3% of net sales.
Wow.
Yeah, for the full year. So, yeah. Oof. Losses for the full year were 105.2 million crowns or $11.4 million. That is an improvement from 130.5 million crowns or $14.1 million for the full year last year. Expenses are up related because of Payday 3 development.
Right. So that's normal.
Yes. It is the 10th anniversary of the Payday franchise. The franchise has now generated 1 billion crowns or $108 million.
Mm-hmm.
It grew on Steam in the full year. Base game sales are up 13% and DLC sales are up 17%.
Interesting.
Console sales are down, though, because they're not supporting consoles with the new content. So the only place to play that new reinvigorated content is on PC. However, Payday 3, when it comes out, is going to align with a cross-platform. So if they release something on PC, it'll be released day and date or thereabouts on console.
That's helpful.
Indeed. They hired 60 new employees in 2021. Starbreeze is aware that it needs to get more games on the market and diversify. Also, one of the things that they did, interestingly, they launched their own account system and player platform in October. Behavior actually just did this with Dead by Daylight as well. This is a trend that we're seeing because I think, and I just had a conversation with a colleague yesterday about, do players expect that if they purchase DLC on one platform, then it's going to work on every platform? And it used to be, no, of course, why would you expect that that's not the case? However, but things are changing.
Things are changing.
Microsoft has changed the conversation around that with Play Anywhere games that are available. If you purchase one license, you get it on Xbox and you get it on Windows 10 or 11.
Yep. Windows platforms.
Windows platforms. Account-based games, we're starting to see that happen a little bit more. If you unlock something, and we're... here's a good example. Dying Light 2, if you get a drop, you can use it on any platform. Gearbox, their system, which I cannot remember the name of it, they release those codes, and you put their codes into their system, you can redeem it on every platform.
Okay.
So it's not that... paid DLC, a little bit different. There's some fuzziness around that right now. So, for instance, I can take my save anywhere with a Ubisoft game that plays on any platform.
Right.
Which is great if I own the base game in different places. But if I buy the DLC on one, I don't get that everywhere else. So I have a Switch copy of Immortals Fenyx Rising.
Right.
But I have the Xbox copy that has all the DLC. If I go to play the DLC on Xbox, I can't take that. I can't actually use that on Switch. You have to buy the DLC.
Everything's very muddy. Because, I mean, if we look back and we look at how insulated each of the platforms were for the vast majority of the last 20 years... You know, we have a very different, we live in a very different reality than the one in which you and I grew up in, that we were used to, which is, no, if you buy it on one platform, it's for that platform and for no other platform.
Well, and that the part of the muddiness is also on PC.
Of course.
Now, we consider, like, Steam is a storefront with some platform features.
Yes.
EGS is a storefront with fewer platform features.
Yes.
But some of the games, if you own it on PC, you can move stuff around a little bit because it's account-based. And some games, you cannot. And I think some of the muddiness around this, remember there was a problem when IO released Hitman 3 and it was on EGS. And then it's like, okay, but I own Hitman 1 and 2 on Steam. Do I not get to bring my content over? Like, how does this whole thing work? Total War Warhammer is another one that has that kind of iterative base game model where it just released on Steam and on EGS.
Mm-hmm.
And if you own Total War, Warhammer 1 and or 2 and any of the DLC for either of those games, you will be able to bring that into Total War Warhammer 3, but only on Steam. So there's no way to, there is no way right now to bring that content, to register that content to an account on PC.
Oh.
And bring it into like EGS.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So there is a lot of fuzziness right now. We're seeing a lot of flux. I have a funny feeling we're going to see this trend of moving towards an account-based system for developers and that are big enough to support it.
It's what we're used to with MMOs. It's what we're used to with multiplayer games, especially.
Sure.
Is having account-based games that you just log into and that's where all your stuff sits.
And yet people have been saying for years now, it's like, why can't I bring my Overwatch skins, especially now that there's cross-play? Why can't I merge those accounts and have access to my skins on any platform?
Right, because they're using the same authentication. So what's the deal here? Why is it all walled off?
Right, and of course we know the answer. Yeah, go ahead.
Is capitalism.
Well, and we know that Sony wants its pound of flesh. So there's a lot there. You know, Microsoft and Nintendo seem to be pretty open about crossplay and cost progression.
Yeah.
But Sony's like, no, there has to be a ratio in place. And if the ratio gets out of balance, we get to get compensated.
Right.
If people purchase on other platforms and then play on our platform.
Right. So it's Sony that, but I mean, even if we, you know, looked at this and didn't have names in it, it is, the problem here is capital.
Sure. Absolutely.
which of course is the basis of our entire podcast.
Which, by the way, comes back to the issue of like NFTs in general, this whole dream of interoperability across games. It's like, this is not how that works. And for a lot of reasons, there's development concerns, there's capitalism concerns. Like, there's a lot of reasons why the NFT dream is a pipe dream.
Yes. But also, cross-progression, I'm hopeful that cross-progression, as much as cross-play is really helpful, it's cross-progression that's really the hurdle that we need to jump
over. Yeah, I think that's the big one. And cross-progression, every time I see it, it makes me happy because it means...
You're putting the player first.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we move on to Embracer Group, I know that Ubisoft reported today. We are still not covering Ubisoft because of their issues, although we will be talking on the news show. A Better Ubisoft Group just did release after 200 days... since their open letter to management and update. It's not great. But on that call, apparently, Yves Guillemot said that Ubisoft can remain independent, but will entertain any offers that might come in.
You remember how I wrote about in my trends piece that this was the year of consolidation?
Yeah.
Remember all of the trepidation that I have around consolidation?
Yeah, this would be a big one. And of course... you know, there are not a lot of companies that could afford to acquire Ubisoft. I don't see Microsoft doing it right now. Sony
sure not could Vendi. Do it.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
There's a blast from the past.
Yeah. Yeah, remember that? That was fun.
That was kind of a nightmare.
Hey, remember when Ubisoft all wore, like, employees wore all those I Believe pins with Yves' name and oh, boy.
Oh,
but here's the thing,
summer children.
Like, obviously, as multiple, like, I commented on this on Twitter, and a couple people, in one way, shape, or form, said, "Well, he has to consider these offers for fiduciary reasons." Absolutely. No, I mean, I'm aware. I completely agree.
And
the issue is when you phrase it like that. And again, I've interviewed Yves Guillemot a number of times. English is not his first language, and he's very sensitive about that.
Yeah.
That said, if you say if you come right out and say, "Yeah, we can remain independent." Does that mean we can, or does it mean our intention is to remain independent? We are not looking for an acquisition. Because when you say, we'll entertain any offers, yeah, obviously, no duh, you have to for fiduciary reasons.
That's
so,
kind of his job as CEO, as steward of the company.
To me, I think this was a very winky, naughty, send us your offers. Because, and we're going to talk about this with regard to Embracer Group in a second. The Ubisoft conversation's interesting, and Arthur Geese, formerly at Polygon, currently at Wirecutter, pointed out on Twitter, he's like, you know, my worry here is that nobody in the game space is really big enough. Sony could leverage some debt to acquire Ubisoft.
Yeah.
They could. And they are probably, in the gaming space right now, prime targets. I don't see EA doing it.
They're too big.
Ubisoft's
too big for
I mean, it would have to be a merger of almost equal. I mean,
would.
And I don't know that EA is looking for that right now.
I don't even think Ubisoft's looking for that.
But then the other players are Amazon, a potential.
Potential.
Google, which I don't think anybody would fare well under Google unless your name is Alchemy.
Unless
which has managed to pull it off. But anybody as big as Ubisoft, I don't think so. And then
that's
Facebook.
Because Alchemy is small and mighty.
Right. Facebook.
I think that honestly it would be awful and probably wouldn't make it through FTC muster.
Yeah, I don't know, especially with everything that's going on at Facebook/Meta right now. My perspective on this is especially with the news that just came out, like literally just before we started recording, that Bobby Kotick has a secret second company that he used to fund Republican candidates.
What?
Oh, well, we knew this, right? We knew he was like...
No, I know that because of the people that he's employed, like torture apologist Fran Townsend.
Yes.
But also, I haven't read this piece yet, so I apparently have...
Yeah, I haven't read it in full
do.
Either. I saw it literally just as we were about to start recording. We'll cover it in the news show in the Labor Report. There's a lot of stuff to talk about in the Labor Report.
There's always a lot of stuff to talk about in the Labor Report.
Yeah. So... But to me, it's like, this is the second situation of a company that has that's executives have done wrong. Not just haven't done right by, but have done wrong by employees. And now it sounds like winky nudgy, like, hey, look at me, buy me out. Give me my parachute, baby.
Yeah, no, I hate that.
Yeah.
You should be held responsible, accountable, and not get to take your golden parachute.
Nope. All right, so that's all we're going to say about Ubisoft. Let's wrap up this earnings show with the Embracer Group. And this is the biggest surprise of the day.
It really is.
Embracer Group did not acquire anything.
Are they okay?
Did not announce any acquisitions.
Are they
today.
Okay?
They're okay.
They're okay?
They're fine. In fact, net sales are up 135% to
$5.085 billion
or $549 million. Their game business sales increased 175% to 3.725 billion crowns, or $402.2 million. In order of contribution to sales, Easy Brain is the largest contributor to sales in its first, and they're in their first Q3 with Embracer.
Wow.
So there's no delta there. Coke Media next, up 46.4%.
Really?
Yeah. Deca Games, up 809%.
Wait, what was that, though? Did you say it right?
Oh, I don't know.
Koch. I would do it every time. Koch. And as always, this is an Opal Stan cast. Yeah. Continue.
I'll just have a Koch and a smile. Deca Games was up 809%. Saber was up 55.2%.
Good for them.
Gearbox is in its first Q3 with Embracer. Mm-hmm. THU Nordic was the only one down. And it was down 7.2%. It is also the second smallest contributor in terms of revenue to Embracer Group.
Very interesting.
Right?
Very interesting.
Yep. And then Coffee Stain was up 76.4%.
Duh.
So a lot of this growth was driven by acquisitions, but organic growth was still up 16%.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really big.
Yeah, really good.
So what were the big games drivers here?
And Coffee Stain were big players. Hot Wheels Unleashed has done amazingly well. And that was developed by Milestone, which is, I believe, wholly owned. They are wholly owned. And that game was published by Koch Media.
I still need to play this game. Yeah. I think it's extremely
good. We got it on the Xbox.
I have to play this
game. Yeah. Coffee Stain's Valheim, Deep Rock Galactic, and Satisfactory continue to churn.
Yeah.
So that's good.
That makes a ton of sense. Those are all really solid titles.
Yep. Interesting note in their selected pipeline from each of their business units. Dead Island 2 is still listed, and in the comments, it could release, actually, finally come out after, hold on, which Gamescom did I play that out? To play that at 2015?
No.
It was 2015 or 2016.
Really?
Yeah.
Wasn't 2014?
I would have to go, I mean, I can go look. Give me one sec.
It's fine, but that is a name I have not heard in many moons.
Hold on.
In terms of, like, actually talking about Dead Island 2 as anything other than just this thing that is technically vaporware right now.
All right. They dropped Jaeger in 2015. So,
then when did you see it?
Hold on a second. Issue 258 was the horror issue. It was 2014. You're right.
Yeah,
it was
2014. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
could have sworn that was the
case. We're talking now 8 years.
8 years in development hell.
Yeah, going through three developers. It went from Jaeger to Dam Buster.
Yeah.
Right? And who is doing it now?
I have no idea.
Hold on. Dead
Fiscal
Island
2023 could be very interesting. So you know what else is interesting?
What's that?
216 development projects, which is, you know.
Sumo's doing it now.
Oh, yeah, we can trust Sumo. Sumo knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
This is up from 150 development projects,
mm-hmm.
including 25 AAA releases through March 2026.
Yeah. They're partner publishing and film business, so this is Koch Media does a lot of distribution in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are the distributor of record for a number of other publishers, a number of other major publishers. That business was up 67% to 1.36 billion crowns or $146.8 million.
Dang.
Their operational earnings before interest and taxes was up 86% to 1.11 billion crowns or $120.8 million. Embracer headcount is at 9,524 people as of the end of 2021, which is not inclusive of acquisitions that have closed or will close or were announced in Q1, including Dark Horse, Asmodee, Cryptic.
And so that's up from just over 5,700 at the end of Q3 for fiscal 21.
Mm-hmm. The number of game developers that they employ increased 69% to 7,824.
So, very
nice. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
Very nice. Very nice. Their organic headcount growth, even without the acquisitions, was 16%.
Yeah, you were saying that. That's just very interesting.
It's really good. So Embracer noted that this is that they're in a period of heavy consolidation.
Uh-huh.
They are receiving a lot of inbound calls.
Really?
Hey, baby, you want to buy us? Yeah. However, they said they're being really
selective. We'll bring you biscuits.
Yeah, they're being selective.
Well, as they should be. I mean, they're at a point now where they can step back and say, look at our empire, essentially. Because just like that we've seen with Sega and with some of the other Japanese publishers, having a ton of diversity is good for your business, right? Unless it's live events, in which case that's kind of touch and go.
Yeah.
But having film, comics, tabletop, this is a transmedia empire.
And the interesting thing, you mentioned tabletop. Like, tabletop should have fallen off a cliff during the pandemic because people couldn't get together, but it's still trucked on just fine.
Still going strong. At some point, we're going to have to start folding in tabletop
over this side. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll definitely have to start talking about it soon. I know Hasbro had a great quarter as well.
We will eventually have to start talking about tabletop on this show.
Yeah, we will. Last note on Embracer. They noted on the call that of the 108 entrepreneurs that have been brought in through mergers and acquisitions since the 2016 IPO, 106 are still with the company.
Holy
smokes. And that's something they pride themselves on. They're like, no, we want to give people enough autonomy that they can do the work they love to do. We want to ensure that they have room to grow. I mean, this is something like Matt Karch. I have a funny feeling this is an interesting conversation that Matt Karch would be perfect for. Because I mean, he's a major player at Embracer. He started Saber. He is the head of Saber, doing a lot over at Embracer right now. The fact that 106 out of 108 entrepreneurs that they brought in, so top executives from these companies,
unprecedented. Yeah, it's wild,
right? And if you think about what happened at EA, right? The Codemasters guys exited, and there was a plan. Like, their plan was, no, we want to fold these in completely, and then exit the executives.
The good doctors exited.
Yep.
At BioWare.
And that's normal, by the way. This is very abnormal. This is
unusual.
But it is, again, when we talk about what's going on in the Nordic region, when we talk about this model where investors are looking to Embracer Group as the pace horse or the pace car, right? This is why we keep our eye very firmly on Embracer. It's a very interesting story. They have not been without their stumbles, of course. Shout out to Mark. But from an operational capacity and from a growth perspective, it's been really fascinating to watch them.
Yeah, it's definitely been really interesting.
Well, that does it.
That does it.
We have a couple more earnings to do before the end of the season, but we're most of the way through at this point.
Yes, I think that we'll probably just wrap in those earnings into our main show.
Yes.
So we managed to keep it to under an hour.
Go us.
Go us. I love it when that happens. So thank you for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast, and I am at Amanda Farrow.
And I am at Footerish, FUTTERISH. You can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com, where you can also find buttons, where you can listen to us on like iHeartRadio and Apple Podcasts and Google Play and Amazon and Stitcher. And Pocket Cast, there's one more.
There's always one more. And here it comes.
Pocket Sands. So please subscribe. And if possible, do review the show. Let us know what you think.
You can also DM us with questions, or you can send them to podcast@fsquared.biz. You can also drop into our Discord and ask us a bunch of questions. We are known to be fairly active in there, and that community is extremely chill. If you haven't had a chance to read our yearly trends pieces, those are live on our website.
Prognostication!
One might call us business sorcerers.
Oh, yeah, baby.
So that's on virtualeconcast.com. I'm sure we'll have more writing at some point, but we have a house to move to. That's about it. We will see you more than likely on Sunday. And in the meantime, remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We shall see you. Bread.